Vivaldi didn't write for the guitar, but the guitarist was playing there, Christopher Parkening, the Mandolin Concerto in C by Vivaldi. Iona Brown with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields.
We thank you for tuning in to WHFR Dearborn during this beautiful classical programming, and we hope that you're having a great time. If you'd like to learn more about some of the talk shows that we host here on WHFR, then let me encourage some time slots and some wonderful programs for you to check out. First and foremost, it's our Friday WHFR Journal, the new WHFR Journal, in fact, hosted by Jay Koronick, our station advisor. Wonderful show, been here for a very long time. But here's the thing, new time slot for that show on Fridays, from the 10 a.m. time slot over now to 1 p.m. So the new WHFR Our journal airs every Friday at 1 o'clock for an hour of great local talk programming. Additionally, Saturday mornings, it's the WHFR Forum, a series of rotating talk shows, including Pet Lover's Lane, We Are Not Alone, and Metaphysically Speaking. You'll want to check out our talk programs and be informed.
I'm Allison Young. We're having some friends over for dinner tomorrow night. And, you know, I love setting the table. But you know how when you can't find exactly the right thing for the center of the table? Beethoven was a little bit like that. He wrote an opera, Fidelio, and he couldn't decide on an overture, something to be in the center of everything. He went through four versions before settling on one, which really wasn't the best one. This one under my voice is probably the best of the four, but like our dinner table, if you put something too grand in the center, it might overwhelm the food, the guests, and all conversation. Beethoven's overture Leonore No. 3 stands all on its own. We'll hear it this hour. Here's a Pastorella Symphony by François-Joseph Gottsek. Jean Lemon leads Tafel Music.
Listening to WHFR Dearborn, non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. Now, just how deeply into our government does UFO secrecy go, and how far will Washington go to protect this secrecy? Our guest today is Washington insider Mr. Stephen Bassett. Mr. Bassett is considered the leading advocate in the nation for ending the 60-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding the UFO subject. He holds a degree in physics and is a political activist, lobbyist, commentator, columnist, and conference producer. He is a founder of the Paradigm Research Group, the executive director for the Extraterrestrial Phenomenon Political Action Committee, or XPAC, and the creator of the Paradigm Clock, and the executive producer of the X Conference. And his work has been covered internationally, from the Washington Post and the Washington Times and New York Times to Pravda and the London Sunday Express. He has appeared on hundreds of radio and television talk shows, and is and also on numerous documentaries, delivering the message to the world that of the likelihood and implications of UFO disclosure. And we are honored to have him on the air with us today on this radio show. Welcome to the show, Mr. Bassett.
Thank you, David. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, it's good to when a while back here we had you on a TV version of We Are Not Alone.
Yes.
That was over the phone, which didn't really work so well on TV, but works great on radio, doesn't it?
Yeah, radio is still where you want to go to get the info. You get more time to talk, and you can get more stuff. TV is too much sound bites.
It's too much sound bites, right? Now, exopolitics. Tell us what that's all about.
Well, to put it in the simplest terms, the people that were looking into the UFO issue, going all the way back to 47, mm-hmm. And we're talking about some pretty high-level people, and high-level civilian scientists and so forth, pretty much, I think, established that the UFO sightings, the craft were being seen, were extraterrestrial in origin. I think that was established as early as 1953.
That this was their conclusion or knowledge?
Well, I'm
or?
Saying that they had enough information.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, this is before the Internet, before Adobe Photoshop, before mm-hmm. you know all of the high-tech video stuff we have now. And this is before the space program and Mach 3 jet planes. We're talking about these craft turning up and being seen and photographed in 47, 48, 49, 51, 52, 53, and people were looking into it, trying to assess the situation, and I think it was pretty clear they had enough information to know that they were ET in origin, mm-hmm. and the government did too, of which we're pretty certain.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is, the ET reality, or the extraterrestrial hypothesis, was probably, should have been established in the late, early 50s, meaning as a national understanding, yes, there's ETs here, we're trying to find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, but then since then, the mass of information that's been accumulated by the researchers worldwide is just huge and overwhelming. So, everything I do is predicated on the fact that the ET hypothesis is valid. It's true. It's fact. It's not speculation, and it's not theory.
Hmm.
There's ETs here, and some of these UFOs are, in fact, ET craft, either manned or unmanned.
Right.
And I have no interest whatsoever in reproving it again. And
no
interest in researching the subject. There are plenty of people doing that, but it's already been done.
Right.
There's still science that needs to be done, but the ET has been proven. Mm-hmm. And so, well, then why isn't it being taught in the schools? Why isn't it there was in our Department of Extraterrestrial Affairs? Why isn't this a fully functional component of our global and national policy? Well, the government made a decision in 52, though I think the decision was probably de facto made in 47, that they didn't want the public to know about this, or at least they didn't want to acknowledge it.
Right.
And that decision, which some call UFO cover-up, I call the truth embargo,
mm-hmm.
because they didn't break the law. They weren't covering up for criminal acts. They made a national security decision, which I can't really challenge. I mean, the problem they faced was pretty enormous,
right.
that they needed to know more about what was going on. They needed to look at the crash vehicles they had, look at the technology, see what could be done with it, and a lot of other things before dumping this thing out into the public. And also into the developing Cold War that was clearly going to be a threat to world security and national security.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand why they did. However, this truth embargo is now 60 years old, and it's simply past its prime. It's no longer of a benefit. It's now a detriment.
Mm-hmm.
And so my work is in the work of all my colleagues, is essentially to change government policy, not to prove the existence of extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm.
They're here. That's a certainty. The government policy we're trying to change, the first one, the primary one, is the embargo itself, meaning end it. And so the whole work of Paradigm Research Group and XPAC and the thrust of the X Conference and everything I do and most of the colleagues that I work with is to effectuate disclosure. Mm-hmm. Now, exopolitics is the term that was coined by Alfred Weber in the late 20th century, culminating with his book in 2000, to describe the total political, social interaction, governmental and everything else, with this issue. Not the science, but the politics.
Mm-hmm.
The government policy, government posture. So exopolitical science would cover all those things, ET-related, whether that be the cover-up, the truth embargo, the history of the issue, policies, whatever, you name it, or up into, eventually including, who knows, galactic diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
It covers it all, beginning to end.
Do you see a Star Trek-type intergalactic fraternity or, you know what I'm saying, where all,
sure,
all the worlds come together? And
Is it unreasonable to assume that highly advanced space traveling civilizations out there have political arrangements with each other?
Well, I would say
hardly not.
Yeah.
So the whole idea of the Galactic Federation and the Federation and what have you that turns up in the sci-fi is not only it's Occam's razor. It's the simplest explanation for what is probably out there.
Hmm.
So is there something, probably, a political alliances of serious kinds? Are we destined to become part of those? Almost certainly, unless, for whatever reason, we are not allowed to.
Do you think?
But this is totally speculating.
Right.
I have no idea. There's plenty of people that have concocted. There are people that have created a Galactic Federation. It's all over the internet, and they're populating it and describing it and whatever. And a lot of it's all channeled information. I have no idea if that's valid at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly demonstrates a logical extension on the part of people who are trying to understand what's going on. Who are these ETs? Why are they here? What do they represent? What's our future with this?
Mm.
And they're trying to piece it together. If they're inventing the whole thing from whole cloth, it still serves a purpose. That's all exopolitics, too, by the way.
Okay.
The social interaction with this issue, the social engagement of this issue, the people, their institutions, all of this exopolitics. If it's dealing with anything ET-related, one way or the other, directly or indirectly, that's exopolitics as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. So it has nothing to do with Earth politics versus ET politics or getting together and having a one-world political system or government. It just has it deals with the politics of the truth embargo against UFOs.
The term is clearly designed and defined to cover a very broad amount of material, but right now we're dealing with certain things. Certain things are in play. Down the line, who knows what'll come under that umbrella? But right now, the principal number one exopolitical issue is disclosure.
Right.
It's not all. That's hardly the sum and total of exopolitics, but it is the number one issue on the plate, on the table.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And what is disclosure? It is the summum bonum of the advocacy right now, and that is disclosure is the day that the United States government, probably, though it could be another government, it will start, right? Which would be interesting and have consequences for the United States.
Ergo, your paradigm clock.
Yeah, well, that's what the paradigm clock's about. So the day that the United States government, another government, major government, holds a press conference or a formal conference and announces and acknowledges the ET presence as being valid, regardless of what else they say that day, they have just executed disclosure, and the paradigm clock strikes midnight.
And what time is the paradigm clock at now?
It has been for about, 15, 18, 16 months, at 15 seconds to midnight, at very close, because I calculated that we were virtually there about 18 months ago, and that anything at any time could trigger it. I still feel that way, and I'm probably going to keep it at 15 seconds to midnight right up through the spring of 2009, because I sort of have a sense that the Democratic leadership at some level has made a decision about this, and I think they're planning something. Huh. And if they're going to do something, it would be early in the administration.
Now, you're there in Washington, right?
Yeah.
Now, you get around in Washington, you meet these congressmen, senators, you know them.
I'm not a high paid lobbyist. I'm a pro bono guy with very little funding. So I don't mingle with the Abramsons or whatever, Abramoffs and the $1 million lobbyists on K Street. No.
No, but you know these guys, don't you?
I know them personally, no.
Yeah.
I have had some contact with Congress. Mm-hmm. I have sent Congress plenty of material.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my lobbying is with the media.
Okay.
The political media is just as important in this issue, in resolving this issue, as the political leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of my lobbying's there, and I've had a lot of contact with various media. I've had some contacts on the Hill.
Right.
But without money to throw around, you don't get access.
Right, right.
I been in Washington for 13 years? You bet I have.
Yeah.
And do I know what's going on in Washington? I have a pretty good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you that based on what I've seen and heard, I think something's in the works for the next administration. And the Democrats would do it early. And the reason they'd have to do it early, disclose early, the mm-hmm. ET reality, is that if they wait too long, the truth embargo becomes theirs. It becomes their policy, too. And then they have to account for that. But if they come in and move quickly, then basically you're saying it's a new day, it's a new dawn. It's truth time in America. It's time for you to know this. We're finally going to be able to do it for you.
Hmm.
Here it is. And so they get all the upside, very little the downside.
Well, isn't this what President Jimmy Carter tried to do when he was?
He made a significant effort to address the issue. To his great credit, it was way too early. It was no way that the military intelligence community was going to let it out. He signed off on two studies, ET studies, in the very first months of his administration, and they were quickly shut down by the Defense Department and other elements within his government. And one of them, they wrapped it up with a report called the UFO Enigma. It was written by Marcia Smith, and it was essentially get it done, get it out of the way, move on. And he, for whatever reason, then just clamped up. I mean, he would not touch it with a 10-foot pole after that, and to this day will not.
Yeah.
The only reason he ever has to say anything about it is because he did have a significant sighting, which is what he brought up in his campaign, which triggered tens of thousands of letters.
Mm.
And he can't get away from that, so he'll get asked about that. But he absolutely will not touch it. And this is not a coward. This man is a brave man. He takes on tough positions, but this issue, literally, he will not touch. I can't imagine what was said to him back in 1977.
Yeah. Do you think it's a matter of, you know, no matter how good their intentions, once they get in there, either they become part of the system or else.
Well, that's always true.
Yeah. If they, perhaps even somebody sat down and talked to him and said, this is why it must remain secret, and he agreed with them. Is that possible?
Look, there are people in this country, people of enormous wealth, and there are people within the military intelligence government contractor world, hugely wealthy as well, who have about as much consideration for the President of the United States as they do for their lawn boy. I mean, as far as they're concerned, he's an elected puppet of the people who comes in, and he could be gone in a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
and they don't view him as an equal
mm-hmm.
and as someone of significance. And
corporate America, that's who runs the country.
Well, that's too general.
No.
I'm just talking about there are people and elements that view the President as nothing more than an irritant.
Right.
And this is a very bad thing, and we need to do something about it very quickly. So the idea that presidents would be cut out of the loop on this issue is shocking but true. But
uh-huh.
not all presidents. And different presidents get different amounts of information.
Uh-huh.
So it's you know, like Reagan knew this and Bush knew that, but they didn't, you know, some are briefed a lot, some a little. This, of course, is ridiculous. I mean, can you imagine if other issues were treated that way? The president comes in and it's like, well, okay, we don't like you very much, so we're not going to tell you much about the Soviet Union. We're not going to tell you much about problems with North Korea. We're just going to give you a little bit of information. But if you were somebody else, we'd give you more. I mean, that's obscene. Or you're the president. Here's some things you can know, but there's a bunch of stuff you can't know.
Mm-hmm.
even though it has enormous national security implications. Why can't we know? Because we don't think you can handle it. You're the president, you can't handle it. But we can. You know, I'm a major, I'm a general, I'm a big shot corporate CEO, whatever, I can handle it, you can't. This has been the status with respect to this issue. This is why the truth embargo is no longer functional. It had its value in the 40s and 50s and maybe, and certainly through the 60s when the Cold War was a mess and we were in Vietnam. But by the 80s it was starting to get ridiculous. By the 90s it was very ridiculous, and now it's a complete and total Louis Carolian a delusion, a facade, a charade. It's a joke, and it's helping to turn America into a joke. Mm. So we've got to get past this. I mean,
now Clinton was supposed to have tried to get something.
Clinton engaged the issue and was listening to Lawrence Rockefeller's efforts in 1993.
Right. And so the Lawrence Rockefeller initiative, the Clinton initiative. I've heard these terms, and I don't really know much about them. Do you?
I know a great deal. If you go to my website, paradigmresearchgroup.org, the main site's the PRG site. So, or if you just Google my name, Stephen Bassett, bingo, with a PH. The first thing that comes up in Google is the main PRG site. And you go to the PRG main site, you will see a link to the Rockefeller Initiative.
Okay.
And this is a page devoted to some of the documents we have supporting the fact that Rockefeller approached Clinton in March of 1993 with the idea of him revealing all the UFO documents, dumping them out to the public, and basically being the disclosure president. And this effort, which we now call the Rockefeller Initiative, went on for 2.5 years. Hillary knew about it, but has said nothing. Podesta knew about it, and he's come out publicly and called for the release of these documents twice, 2002, 2003. A lot of people don't know that.
Has Podesta said, yes, the Clintons knew about it, or one of the Clintons knew about it?
He hasn't said anything publicly other than what he said. He is given two public statements, and he will not answer questions. He avoids anything like that. But he did come out. In other words, he came out of the closet.
Right.
In other words, he said, I'm out of the closet. Now, he's still holding on the doorknob, but he came out of the closet. And so whatever comes down the line, he could say, look, I came out and said what needed to be said. We needed to release these documents, and by inference, we need to end this truth embargo.
Right.
But he ain't saying anymore. He's not advancing. And I think one of the reasons he's not advancing it is that they want it to be a Democratic legacy. They don't want it to accrue to the Republicans. I can appreciate their position.
Yeah.
So he came out in 2002, 2003, and Bill Richardson wrote a foreword to the Roswell Dig Diaries in which he called for the release of information on Roswell and the fact that he felt that the Roswell explanation by the government was not did not hold water.
No,
which was a pretty significant statement by a man
silly,
running for president.
Yeah.
But I think that the reason that they did that, I think they were anticipating, they thought they were going to win the 2004 election. And I think if the Democrats had won the 2000 election, I think we'd have had disclosure in 2005. But they didn't. And so Richardson shut up, Podesta shut up, and then things didn't heat up again until really last year, late last year, really heat up when Shirley MacLaine outed Dennis Kucinich, who knows a lot more about this issue than he's letting on.
Right.
Big surprise, which triggered questions to Kucinich and Richardson. And, of course, I've been pounding away for some time with the media, pumping them with information and demands that they start asking these political aspirants, these people who want to be the most powerful leader in the world, questions about the ET issue. It's not trivial that extraterrestrials are here, and if any candidate thinks it is, they certainly have no business being in the White House.
I hear you.
Things are heating up again. The upshot again is that I'm seeing enough of I'm reading the tea leaves, and I believe that the Democrats are planning disclosure in 2009. Now, let me also say that other countries are really starting to show discomfort with the U.S.-led truth embargo. First world nations that also know about the ET presence, like France, like Germany, like England, like China, like Japan, France.
Russia also, huh?
I know, in Russia, yes, absolutely, absolutely. Any of the first world nations with substantial air forces know that there's an ET presence because they've been chasing these things. They've all been sending up chase jets going back 40 years, and they've got gun camera footage of these things, which they have never released, of course.
Yeah, some of it has leaked through the cracks. So, and I want to continue this with you in a moment, but right now I'm going to have to take a break. So we'll get right back with Stephen Bassett. I need to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone.
Notice anything different about your doctor lately? Did he or she ask a few more questions or spend a little more time explaining your condition? Today, doctors know the best health care begins with communicating. That's where you can help. Write down your questions in advance. Insist on understanding your treatment options so you can make informed decisions together. After all, you are on the same team. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together. On the web at orthoinfo.org.
Are you an HFCC college student looking for a particular textbook? How about writing utensils, paper, or Henry Ford apparel? You can find it all at the Henry Ford College Store. The College Store carries textbooks, supplies, clothing, and the most widely used classroom software. Staff members are always on hand to help you out. The College Store is located on the main campus in Dearborn, right next to the Facilities Management Building. For more information on the Henry Ford College Store, call them at 313-845-9603 or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu to order textbooks and quick study guides. The Henry Ford College Store has everything that you need to succeed.
Big band tunes Monday afternoons from 2 to 4 p.m. Only on WHFR.FM, the station that's making waves.
This is WHFR, the station making waves. And I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with Washington insider, Mr. Stephen Bassett. Mr. Bassett, we were talking about the people in Washington, the presidents and would-be presidents that know or don't know about the UFO phenomenon and its validity, its reality. Who else do you feel knows, or do you know, knows about the UFO phenomenon?
Well, Kucinich has been substantially briefed by colleagues of mine, Alfred Weber, Carol Rosen, Danny Sheehan.
Okay, members of the Disclosure Project?
They were members of the Disclosure Project, yes, and are still involved in the deal one way or another. I think Shirley MacLaine, who he's known for 30 years, 25 years at least, has talked to him extensively about it. But again, he won't speak to it, and it's a huge mistake on his part. He's missing a tremendous opportunity,
right?
But he won't do it. I think Richardson has got some good information. I have a feeling Richard's been clued in because he has had some pretty important positions, particularly the head of the Energy Department. Clinton, I don't think, got any information from the government itself, military intelligence community, or was briefed on the subject when he was president because they didn't like him. I mean, they hated him when he came in. I think they felt better about him when he left. But Rockefeller certainly started the ball rolling, and there was a lot of information passed to the administration in the first year. I think he got a sense of it. What Hillary got a sense of, I don't know, but she was right there. She certainly knew what was going on, which is why she needs to be asked questions about it, and she needs to state a position. Mm-hmm. She thinks the Rockefeller admission was nonsense. She should say so. If she thinks the UFO issue is silly, she should say so. But so far, she will say nothing.
Right.
She will volunteer nothing, and no one will ask her. That's going to change. I don't think she can get through this campaign without being queried on this issue eventually by somebody.
In the political media, yeah.
Somebody that she can't dodge.
Yeah, she's
and then there's a whole history of the presidential involvement, which you can learn the most about at a website called presidentialufo.com. Mm-hmm. Presidentialufo.com. Grant Cameron site. He's my colleague and researcher in Winnipeg, Canada. Now. Sure. One thing I want to emphasize here. First of all, let me mention that you've got the great name for the show. We Are Not Alone.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make it really clear to your listeners. We are not alone. There's an extraterrestrial presence engaging this planet right now and has been for the last 60 years, if not the last 60,000. Know that. Understand that. Anybody that tells you differently doesn't know what they're talking about. particularly your science professors, right, at school, and the academic community has blown this so bad that I don't think they'll ever live it down. I think that the academic community of the second half of the 20th century is going to have a black mark on them. It's just never going to go away. Their utter failure to take this issue on and stand down and let the government have its way on this embargo is just a disgrace. And I don't know when they're going to get their act together, probably only when the government announces disclosure and then they'll all run around asking for money to study the things. But, you know, they better not ask me for any money because they won't like what I have to tell them.
From the taxpayer, yeah.
But the thing is that you know, the government is bankrupting the nation. There's enormous environmental challenges we're facing. There's ET technology stuck in the deserts and underground facilities which we can't get access to, which are not available to address our problems, not available to address global warming, carbon-based emissions, and all that. That ET technology is sequestered behind the truth embargo, only available for weapons research or for whatever the government feels like, but not for the citizens. This is just the beginning of stuff that they're going to end up dealing with. I mean, the students of your college, the students today who are not really into this issue yet, they haven't really figured it out, they haven't gotten it, are the ones that are going to deal with the consequences of this truth embargo far more than I. I don't have that many years left, but they'll be around for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they have been pretty much kept out of the loop. They have not seen the wisdom of jumping into this issue. They've bought the government's nonsense or they don't care. Mm-hmm. But boy, they better care. Because if we don't get this technology into play and use it to address the enormous problems we're facing. Let me put it another way. The ET technology that we have probably in our labs, fully engineered or substantially engineered right now, could probably totally change the carbon emission issue and dramatically reduce global warming, but it would take a little money out of the energy and oil companies and the pockets of their CEOs, who are already richer than God.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a greed being demonstrated amongst the military-industrial complex, which is beyond anything I even thought possible as a child. Hmm. They simply, $100 million is not enough. They get $1 billion, they want $5 billion. They get $5 billion, they want $50 billion. Hmm. There's simply no amount of money that they're satisfied with, and they're willing to, and a lot of them, not all of them, but there are a lot of them are willing to keep this technology in embargoed and let us buy $150, $200, $250 oil and pay $4, $5, $6, $7 a gallon so that they can be multi-billionaire. This is almost a crime against humanity, and it's going on every single day. Because I can tell you, we have ET technology. We've had it since the 40s. It's been worked on extensively. I believe we have our own versions of these craft. These craft use energy and propulsion systems which simply are transcendent. And they are not available to deal with our pressing issues. They are not out in the open for commercial development because if they were brought out, the truth embargo would collapse because mm-hmm. everybody would say, where did you get these?
Mm-hmm.
And people and the idea, oh, no, we cooked it up in our secret labs. People are not going to buy it for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to maintain the secret, they're willing to sacrifice the lives of millions and millions of people and bankrupt the country because the cost of fighting the wars for oil and the wars for water and the wars for food is going to bankrupt America. We already have $9 trillion in basic debt and a total trillion, $53 trillion, in overall debt, once you include entitlements, $53 trillion. That's $140,000 for every single household in America. Now, the kids today are going to be bankrupt, and yet they don't understand this. They don't see this embargo. They don't realize what's being kept from them. They don't see what they're missing. Though they love science fiction, and they throng to the movies, and they love X-Files and that kind of thing, but they don't know that there's really ETs here, and there's real politics involved, and there's real policy involved, and they're going to the ones that are going to take the hit. Not me. I'll be dead and gone while they are looking at a world which they may find unfit to live in, and that all of that's avoidable if we could put enough pressure on the government to end this embargo.
Yeah, but it's these energy barons of today that are saying, what do I care? I won't be here anymore.
No, they don't care.
They don't care.
No, they don't care. They don't care if the whole continent's burned up and died and went away.
They don't care
about their own. As long as they can retire with, or they can go to their grave with $10 billion, $20 billion. Right.
They don't care about their own grandchildren.
No. No, it's remarkable. It is remarkable the venality of certain segments of government and corporate leadership.
Yeah.
It's absolutely astounding.
Now, there's going to be the skeptic out there that says, now, Mr. Bassett, where's your proof?
Proof of what?
Proof that we have these technologies. We back-engineered these technologies from ET craft.
The proof comes from a number of sources. First of all, there's substantial proof of crash vehicles, particularly Roswell. And anybody who thinks that we would get an ET craft in our hands and then just bury it is an idiot. All right. We would study and inspect it to the utmost and reverse engineer everything on it we could. We have a number of people who have seen UFO type craft, meaning saucer type craft, operating in a coordinated fashion over military bases and coming and going and landing. We've had people that have seen these craft or images or schematics of these craft at various times and places within government, and clearly these were government designed. But since you don't see, you know, saucers capable of non-inertial propulsion parked out at the Air Force bases up the street, therefore that tech is not available. So a lot of the evidence is coming from witness testimony, first-hand witness testimony of sightings, plus first-hand stuff inside government, plus the logical conclusion that any proof of a crash vehicle would certainly mean that they've been engineering this stuff, which does raise the issue. Okay, even if you could prove that there were crashes, that doesn't mean that they would have been able to successfully re-engineer any of that technology.
Right.
However, when you find later people are seeing vehicles like that over our bases, landing and coming and going, therefore, it's a pretty simple conclusion to say, well, obviously they must have re-engineered these craft and created their own. So my certainty level with respect to the ET presence is 100%. My certainty with respect to re-engineered human versions of ET-type craft is probably around 95, which is pretty good.
Well, there's the people will say, too, I've heard it many times when descriptions of these craft, especially the triangular-shaped craft that, that seem to stay up there without any propulsion system whatsoever.
Right.
Well, there were probably prototypes of our own military. And you're saying, too, that we may have back-engineered it. So, but of course they're going to put this on, you know, they don't need any ETs to
well, that's
show
okay.
them
no,
how.
Well, no, you have to have ETs. Look, there have been plenty of people who have seen the black triangles.
Uh-huh.
Now, when you see a 300, 400, 500, 600-foot massive craft like that silently cruise over your head 300 feet at 20 miles an hour, okay,
all right,
you know two things. One, it's either extraterrestrials. Or it came from extraterrestrials, one way or another. Now, what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say that the technology that would allow, that would make such a vehicle possible is not within any human scientific development trajectory that we're aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And understand, these triangles were seen some time ago. It's not like they showed up yesterday.
Right.
So if we have built such a vehicle, we had to use technology derived from the crashed ET vehicles of the 40s and 50s. It's just no way, I believe, that there's any basis you could say, no, we came up with this. Essentially, or to put it another way, these are anti-gravitic craft. Okay. In other words, they're canceling gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, you've got a vehicle going over your head that's massive, it's anti-gravitic, but it's not ET. Humans cooked it up, and the military has it. But it's not available to anybody else. So we're sending our astronauts out into space on giant exploding chemical rockets and then gliding them back on empty, you know, basically flying hot plates. They could be using an anti-gravitic craft and go up there, no problem. But they're not allowed to because what? The cover-up? And so we're depriving our astronauts of this technology. Why? Because we invented it, but we just don't want to let it out? None of this makes any sense. The only thing that makes sense is the ET hypothesis. So people can raise all the doubts they want about this part and that part. You can pick any particular event or piece of evidence and raise doubts about it, but you cannot explain the totality of the evidence. That's how people get convicted in courts, not by a single piece of evidence, but by the totality of the evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. And so when you look at the total picture, the only thing that explains the action of the government, the events that are being seen, is an extraterrestrial hypothesis involving the presence of extraterrestrials, the crashing of vehicles, the working and re-engineering of vehicles. That explains it. Nothing else does.
Yeah, and then they see these craft, and they say, well, they've got to be prototypes of human, you know, American craft. But then when you say to the government, or I've heard cases where the government has said, or the military has said, this was something we were experimenting with. And they say, well, fine, then all you have to do is give me a date and a time and a place and do a flyover, and I'll film them. I know you're going to be there, and you can prove it to me. Well, no, we can't do that because it's secret. Wait a minute, you just flew them over all of Arizona.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This is secret? You know, Phoenix saw the whole thing.
Yeah.
And not just Phoenix either, but these triangles all over the place. In fact, there was just one in Texas. Was that a...
Well, not a triangle,
no,
but
it was a
substantial craft.
Right.
Not sure what it was, but it's a major sighting, and it's been getting a lot of play. Yeah, you're right. This is one of many of non sequiturs and in illogical explanations. It just doesn't hold water.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a secret aircraft, incredibly advanced, that you absolutely must sequester from the public, you don't fly it over major cities. You don't let it be seen. If you let it be seen, then it's not secret, really, which raises the question, then why isn't it involved in other aspects of our work, what we're doing? Why is it involved in our space program? Well, there is an answer for that. There is an answer. There are two answers. One, it was a human craft, but it cannot be used in anything but their clandestine covert activities, because to bring it out would end the truth embargo, which they don't want to end yet.
Uh-huh.
Or the other explanation, it's an ET craft who can come and go as they want.
Uh-huh.
So there's the two explanations. The explanation that, oh, no, there's no ETs, this is just a super, super anti-gravitic human craft that we don't want anybody to know, but we do fly it around a lot and let people see it. I mean, please. I mean, this is ridiculous. Let's not insult our intelligences.
People will buy it.
What now?
People will buy that.
People will buy anything
if you
stick it on TV enough.
Yeah.
That's nothing we can do about that.
Yeah.
What people buy and don't buy is not the issue. What the issue is enough individuals are going to look at this and take proper action, meaning political journalists, members of Congress, scientists, and academics that have the ability to still think.
Mm-hmm.
We'll look at the evidence and say, look, this is real. We've got to deal with this. And they ask the right questions, and we'll move forward. It doesn't matter whether 10, 15, 20, 30% of the American people are still buffaloed or not. You don't need full consensus or 100% to move forward. You just need a relatively cogent plurality of institutions and people
mm-hmm.
that are prepared to deal with the real world as it's called for,
mm-hmm.
Which is to say that, you know, even if 50% of the world's people today thought the world was flat, that wouldn't make it any less round.
And you know what? There are still people today that believe the world is flat. Do you believe that? It is. The flat earthers. I in researching my first book, I found that this is true. Still people that believe that. And I'm going to have to take a break one more time. So we're going to get right back with our special guest, Mr. Stephen Bassett. Need to remind you that you're listening to WHFR, the station making waves here in Dearborn, 89.3 FM on your radio, WHFR.FM on your computer. And, of course, you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I am David Twitchell, and we'll be right back right after this. Don't go away.
They call me Dave. I have an uncanny ability to save energy and money.
Really?
No, I don't have superpowers. I just bought Energy Star labeled appliances, windows, and a programmable thermostat. But I'm no superhero.
You're saving money, energy. That means you're saving the planet. You can't get more super than that.
Discover your own energy-saving superpowers at the Alliance to Save Energy's website, asc.org/consumers.
Do you find it difficult to find the time to work out? Does the price of a gym membership seem too expensive? Don't let these reasons get in the way of exercising. Try the Henry Ford Community College Fitness Center. The HFCC Fitness Center is conveniently located on campus in the Athletic Memorial Building. Drop in between classes or before you go home for the day. You'll save valuable time because you won't have to commute to a gym. And the best part is that use of the fitness center is free to HFCC students. Students should bring their student ID for access. Lockers are available for no charge, but you must provide your own lock. Come and work out at the HFCC Fitness Center.
Listen, boy. Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3 p.m. on WHFR, the station making waves, is the only time and place to hear the nationally syndicated show Mountain Stage, live music from the mountain state of West Virginia. Mountain Stage features acts from folk, blues, bluegrass, singer-songwriters, and more. It's Mountain Stage, 1 to 3 p.m. every Sunday on WHFR.fm. Mountain Stage, where musicians come to play.
This is WHFR.fm making waves, and I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking once again with Mr. Stephen Bassett, Washington insider, lobbyist for disclosure of the UFO reality. And Mr. Bassett, tell us about this X conference. What is that?
It's one of the advocacy components of PRG's work. The fourth X conference will be held April 18 through 20 at the Hilton Gaithersburg outside of Washington, D.C. It's about 3 months from now.
Gaithersburg?
Gaithersburg, Maryland, yeah.
Okay.
Just outside the Beltway. We have quite a group of speakers coming in. Edgar Mitchell is the keynote. We have Paul Hellyer, the former defense minister of Canada. We've got Dr. Bruce McAbee, Dr. Tom Ballone, Dr. John Alexander, Dr. Scott Jones, and Richard Dolan, and some exopolitical activists coming in from Canada. But we're going to have approximately 13 lectures, no, maybe 15 lectures, and two panels, banquet, party, the works. The website with all of this registration, the works, is at x-conference.com. That's x-conference.com. And people can register. They can also book their rooms at a conference rate directly with the Hilton Gaithersburg. There's a phone number there to do that. We hold it in Washington in order to help put the statement out there to the Capitol, to the Congress, that we're here and we're serious. All the members of Congress are invited. All the presidential candidates have been invited to come. We do get some staffers typically. So it's a significant conference. The first three have gone very well, and very powerful experience. It's 3 days. There's day passes, though. You can go Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, or two of those three, or all three. And then we have a banquet on Saturday night with the PRG awards and other stuff. So it's a wonderful event, and April is a wonderful time to come to Washington for an extended visit, tie-in with the conference.
Sounds great. That's the X Conference. And it's xconference, is it .org or .com?
x-conference.com.
.com. Okay. x-conference.com.
Or if you go to paradigmresearchgroup.org, you can link. There's obviously links to the X Conference from there.
Yeah, and that's all one word, paradigmresearchgroup.org?
Correct.
Very good. Yeah, and Stephen Bassett, B-A-S-S-E-T-T, is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, and Google him if you want. Now, you were, weren't you just involved in a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington? Tell us about that.
Well, the last X Conference was in September. September 14, 15, 16, I think it was. And we hold a press conference at the National Press Club after each one. It was a very good press conference. We announced some of the events and some of the things that were unfolding at the X Conference and some initiatives that we're trying to pursue. We had some good coverage. We got coverage in the Washington Post and also some video coverage, several local stations. And we will do this again. We continue to give the media, the press, the political press, as well as the members of Congress and other politicos in this town, the opportunity to come and get the information firsthand.
Do they come?
Well, they came. We got some good press coverage at the NPC, the National Press Club, and we get some staffers that come, but they're not exactly beating our door down. They're still afraid. It's fear. It's mostly fear. It's not what I would call a professional decision. They're afraid of the issue because the government has embargoed it, and has done its best to ghettoize the issue, to ridicule it, and have made people afraid of it, which, of course, you just don't want to do that. You don't want to make people afraid of their own reality. Now, the Catholic Church did the same thing. I mean, people, there were a lot of people before Columbus that thought that the Earth was probably round and were challenging some of the Catholic orthodoxy about the way the universe might be constructed or the solar system. And they killed them. They burned them. They chopped them up. They and put them in prison. In other words, they intimidated them. Don't address reality. We will tell you what's real and what's not real. Well, that was a long time ago. We should be by the past that now.
I don't believe we are.
We're not yet. No, you still got governments out there basically telling their citizens whole, completely concocted, delusional representations of what's really going on in the world, and they have the power of the state behind them, and out of fear and other means, they get people to buy it. And there's always bad things that come from that. Yeah. Whether you're trying to convince one group that another group is the devil so that they will all go out and butcher them, or whether you're trying to convince one nation that another nation is its mortal enemy, whether you're trying to convince people that the moon is made of green cheese, whatever you're trying to convince them of, you will persuade a lot of people to go along with you out of intimidation. And always it leads to bad things. Now, what could be more important than the fact that we're not alone, that there are other extraterrestrial beings engaging us, there are other civilizations out there, and we could learn about that tomorrow if we just acknowledge it to ourselves and allow all institutions to engage it? What could be bigger than that? And so, you know, the Catholic Church, you know, recently apologized for putting Galileo in house arrest and denying the truth of the solar system.
A little late, isn't it?
Better late than never. And that was small potatoes compared to this. The U.S. government is trying to do something that's almost beyond comprehension, and that is to tell millions of people every day, that stuff you're seeing, it isn't there. There's nothing to this.
And every photo is a hoax.
Yeah, it's all not true. And every time they do it, people just, their disdain and contempt for government, their distrust of government just grows a little bit more. Yeah. And right now we know distrust in government is at record highs.
Yes.
Approval ratings are at record lows. And it's all making everything hard. And really, it's toxic, and it's creating a sick country on many levels, by the way. And there's going to be a heavy price to pay. You just don't screw around with the primal forces at this level. The presence of extraterrestrials isn't casual news. Now, I know that the media thinks that anything that Britney Spears does has virtual global implications.
I hear you.
But it doesn't. But if they spent one-hundredth the time on the ET issue they spend on Britney Spears, we would be probably on our ways to the stars right now. So things are cockeyed. Upside down, and it's and people know it, and they sense it in their gut. Kids less so, I think, but they will eventually. And it's created an unease amongst people in general. They sense something is dramatically wrong. They know that things are not quite right, but as long as they can make their paycheck and pay their rent, they're relatively okay. Maybe it'll take an economic collapse to get people out of their comfort zone and really on the government's back. We'll see. But let me tell you, the things that are at stake right now are huge. And never before in history, at no time in history have we been more in need of a very truthful and accurate representation of the world being made available to citizens and nations. Inaccuracy and propaganda and misinformation right now would be catastrophic, and we're still clinging to it like a security blanket. It's like the government deals, like if they can't lie at least 10 times a day, it's just going to fall apart. This is an illusion. It's an addiction. They have an addiction to lying, and they need rehab. They need to go into rehab, and we probably need a new group of people in Washington for a while, and they can come back once they get clean, but an addiction to lying is now no longer an acceptable option for governing.
Yeah, tell me if disclosure were to happen tomorrow, what do you think the implications nationwide, worldwide, would be? I mean, they've already pretty much admitted, like you say, in France, to their people? That,
no, they haven't admitted. What they're doing is they're doing things which are putting pressure on the U.S. to do something.
Right.
They're dumping records. They're dumping out files. They're doing some studies. But they haven't said anything formally for us. But if the disclosure event will be the most profound event in human history.
Okay.
You know, I'm even including the religious events that people are quite fond of. And the only reason I say that is that this event will be global overnight, and it will affect more people than any event in human history. We're talking about 6 billion, 0.3 billion people in play here. Mm-hmm. Their lives, everything will change in an instant. Nothing that has happened before in history, including religious events, matches this mm-hmm. in terms of scope and breadth. So the world will be a totally different place the day after, and the implications are almost incalculable. Now, will we handle it well? I think we will. I think overall we're going to be better off we're going to be better off on that path. Mm. Now, if people demand more truth and we get more stuff out in the open and start airing the dirty laundry and cleaning out the basements and the attics and so forth, I think we will see a change in attitude toward government, and we will see an ability for people to start moving off their positions, their intractable positions, and possibly negotiating something other than who blows up who next. Mm. So, but I'm pretty optimistic that we won't have too much trouble dealing with ETs. I think we're going to be very excited about it. I think it's going to be a big deal. I think people are going to be very positive overall. There'll be some that will act badly, but so what? What else is new? And it'll be a new world. And that world will unfold, and hopefully as many people as possible, particularly young people, will be part of constructing that new world in the post-disclosure reality. Mm. I hope they don't just go back and sit in front of their televisions and go, okay, ETs are fine. Now, what's on at 9 o'clock? Where's American Idol?
I want my MTV.
Yeah, yeah. If they do, they're really, you know, if they live 1,000 lifetimes or 100,000 lifetimes, they'll never get a chance like this to be part of a remaking of an entire planet's worldview. Right. This is going to be the most profound event in human history, and I hope most people will engage. But some people will just go back to sleep. That's okay. But I think enough people will engage it that it'll be a sight to behold, and I'm looking forward to it. It can't happen too soon, as far as I'm concerned. I think that we're in a race now between two clocks, the paradigm clock, which is the disclosure event, midnight is disclosure, and the doomsday clock, which has been around since 47, and that's midnight and the doomsday clock, as most people know, is nuclear war. Mm. I think we're in a race to see which clock strikes midnight first. Mm-hmm. If the doomsday clock strikes first, then disclosure may become a moot point.
Yeah.
It won't matter. Mm-hmm. But if the paradigm clock strikes first and we get disclosure, I think we may finally see the world able to maybe once and for all look at itself in a proper context, and we may be able to reduce and eliminate these nuclear weapons and start settling our international differences so that, you know, human slaughter just isn't on the table anymore.
Well, there was a recent poll. You were talking about the people that would, you know, just go back to their TVs. There was a recent poll that showed that 5%, if told tomorrow that official confirmation, mm-hmm. official disclosure, ET exists, they're here, that 5% said they would not believe it anyway.
Mm-hmm. That wouldn't surprise me. That would be a reasonable number, and of course wouldn't matter. I mean, that would be fine. That would be the reason that they say that, and the reason it's a valid point is mm-hmm. that it is an incredibly profound thing, and for a lot of people a little hard to handle, and they just won't believe it, and that'll cushion it. Uh-huh. And they will get around to it later. That's okay. I mean, you don't have
to
all
to
jump
later?
On board.
They'll get around to it later?
Yeah. In other words, they may not believe it on day one, but in time they'll believe it.
They'll
have no choice.
They have no choice. Well,
because, let me tell you, for your kids listening, let me tell you, my assessment of the situation is this, that this disclosure process has happened before. That in civilizations all across the galaxy, every planet goes through this moment. Uh-huh. And that it's kind of a required rite of passage that is necessary to maintain social stability. And once disclosure, the self-acknowledgement has taken place, I wouldn't be surprised within 2 or 3 years after that, 4 years, that we will have formal out-in-the-open ET contact, which, of course, is an even bigger deal in some respects. So, and after that, and all bets are off. I mean, who knows? But I think the kids that are in school today have a good chance of going to the stars, being involved possibly in a reality that where we have political interactions going on with other civilizations in a world that virtually incomprehensible even now, but certainly from 20 years ago. So there's enormous future ahead of them, but standing between them and that future is really bad government, really truly bad government. And if they don't jump on board and help, you know, the baby boomers and the Gen X's solve this problem and get government policy in line with reality, they will pay a price, a very heavy price.
Unless E.T., you know, does the disclosure themselves by making themselves known.
Which they can do at any time, but I can tell you that will be far more damaging than self-disclosure. If the, if this issue is forced in the open by the ETs themselves, it's going to just shred the government trust levels and break the social contract.
They'll just say, we didn't know. Gee, we didn't know.
And nobody will believe that either. I mean, the government will look stupid, ineffectual, out of the loop. Will it betray the people's trust? You list anything you want. It would be, I think, catastrophic. So that's why I think the ETs haven't done it. I mean, they can do it anytime they want to. They could put 100 saucers over Washington Mar. That would be the ballgame, wouldn't it?
Back in the 50s.
I say put them over. I mean, park them over Washington, D.C. But they don't. Why not? Well, that's a good question. It's a $64,000 question. And I think the reason is that they do not want to force disclosure themselves. But they certainly are pushing it. And they're stimulating it. They're encouraging it by their presence and by being seen and photographed relatively constantly all around the world. This has the effect of driving this process forward without question and undermining a government's ability to maintain a facade, you know, this surreality.